This will be for the schus of David, Avraham, and Miriam and his family. I want to continue with what we said last week and then kind of build on that. Last week we discussed that month of Mar Cheshvan. And the main theme of Mar Cheshvan, as we described it, we used the imagery of the Mabul, but it's the idea that we are cast into a month that's very mundane. There's no Yontif, there's no special days in the month per se. And we're kind of challenged, are we going to be able to carry through on all of our commitments and inspiration of Tishrei? So that was the general theme of Mar Cheshvan. What I wanted to add to what I said last week are a few additional thoughts about that same, it's really the same point, but different ways in which we see it. We've discussed many times how every single month has a Shevet, has a letter, has a sense. So the Shevet of Mar Cheshvan is Shevet Menashe. And I'm not going to speak long about Menashe, but one thing we know about Menashe, Yosef had two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. Ephraim, we find that Chazal described, was the one who carried on Yosef's traditions in Ruchnias. He was the one who Yosef taught Torah to. He was kind of the spiritual one of the sons. Menashe was known to run the mundane tasks in Yosef's household. He translated for Yosef. He was the one who took care of the more mundane everyday tasks. So it does seem appropriate that this month corresponds to Menashe, being that Mar Cheshvan is a month about everyday tasks and everyday living. Therefore, Menashe is the Shevet of that month because they also stand for the idea that we're going to live everyday life, run our business and everyday affairs based on Torah. So that's the idea about Menashe. The letter of Mar Cheshvan is the letter Nun. The letter Nun. So I think there's two ways we can understand the letter Nun in relation to the idea that we've mentioned last week. Number one is that the letter Nun is missing from Ashrei. Ashrei goes to the Aleph Beis and it skips the letter Nun. So why is there no letter Nun? So the Gemara tells us the letter Nun is actually a letter which connotes Nefila, a falling, a downfall. So we skip it in Ashrei because we don't want to talk about Nefila, about falling down, but we go straight to Samech. Samech is Somech Hashem Chol Noflim. Hashem supports all those that have fallen. So letter Nun has a negative connotation to it about Nefila. So I would also suggest Cheshvan is a month where there is Nefila in Cheshvan. Tishrei is a month that's on a very, very high plane. Cheshvan is a month that's on a much lower plane. And there is at least the potential for Nefila. And the feelings around that, you know, this month's not quite as inspirational, as exciting as Tishrei. But yet, through that Nefila, we have to grow. So Nun represents Nefila, and this is a month where we can't fall. We have to understand the month might make us feel like we need to fall, or we are falling, but we have to be able to rise up through that challenge. On the other hand, the letter Nun also represents what we mentioned last week as well. A Nun in Aramaic, we mentioned, was a fish. Yeshua ben Nun, we spoke about a couple weeks ago, that he's ben Nun, he's related to it's like a fish, compared to a fish. In Aramaic, the term Nune Yama means fish of the sea. So the letter Nun also we translated as fish. And we discussed at length how the month of Cheshvan is the month of the Mabul, and we spoke about how the idea of fish is that they're able to survive in the treacherous waters. So it really just fits the idea we mentioned last week, that we are cast into a month of like a Mabul, where the waters around us are raging waters trying to suck us in. And the letter of the month is Nun, which translates as fish, to try to show us that the model of surviving Cheshvan is to learn how to be like a fish, to learn how to swim, to learn how to survive the dangerous waters and the struggles. And we also mentioned how Mar Cheshvan is the month of rain, and fish are the ones who will be able to thrive in the water, so it also very much fits the month of Mar Cheshvan. So those are two brief thoughts. I thought I'd like to speak about a little bit longer is the sense of the month. The action, we always say there's an action or there's a sense in every single month. So the Mar Cheshvan, the Sefer Yetzirah says, corresponds to the Chush HaReach, the sense of smell. So that's a harder one to figure out. Like, what's the connection of Cheshvan to the sense of smell? Where does that come from? So, you know, Reach has a lot of different understandings in the world of Machshava. But one point about Reach, Reach is something the Torah refers to, let's say, for instance, when they were to burn a karban. There's a word called Azkara LaHashem, which translates as there's a beautiful aroma for Hashem. And what does that mean? A scent is something, an aroma is something that remains even after the event is over. That's one, at least one place we have reach. So for instance, someone makes a delicious dinner and everything's eaten up, but the kitchen still smells delicious. Even though everyone finished dinner half an hour ago, it still smells good in the house. Why? Because scent is something, aroma is something that sticks around even after the event is over. On the other hand, you walk into, let's say, like a barn, and the cows are already out in the pasture grazing. It still smells like cows in the barn. You can smell this in the barn, even though the cows are long gone. But the scent remains behind. The smell is there. So Marcheshvan's a month that has to do with smell, with aroma. And I think one explanation of that is, again, back to the same concept. It's the month that's supposed to leave us with the impression of Tishrei. There's still a reyach of Tishrei in the air. You know, we just finished Tishrei, and we just finished Yom Kippur and Sukkot, and that still should remain in the air for us. And the opportunity is there to savor that aroma, to savor that smell, and roll with it. On Motzei Shabbos, we smell Besamim at Havdalah. And part of the idea is that that smell should help Shabbos stick with us throughout the week. It's described, there's different reasons why we smell Besam Motzei Shabbos, but it's described that the Neshama is in pain, that it's missing Shabbos, the Shabbos is gone, and the delicious smell of the Besamim helps to ease the Neshama. So we like to understand it, that there is some takeaway from Shabbos that we get through that smell. That the Neshama gets eased, that means that the Neshama is sad that Shabbos is gone. But when it breathes in the aroma of Shabbos still a little bit, that there's delicious smelling spices, that keeps the neshama happy for the next week. It's the same idea, that it helps us to maintain that which was there before. Smell is something that remains even after it's long gone. It's funny that smell has the ability to bring us back in our minds to situations, you know, of many years past. People remember like the smell of their grandmother's house or something, you know, the smell of their mother's potato kugel. Like every, these smells really transport us back in time long after we don't experience the thing anymore. And it's interesting because Svarim point out that the one sense that wasn't involved in the chet of Adam Rishon was a sense of smell. And just to explain that for a second, it's an interesting point. If you go back to the story in Bereishis about the chet of Eitz Hadas, so we know that Chava is enticed by the snake. So the snake speaks to Chava, so her sense of hearing is involved in the sin. And then Chava says, here it is. So she said, well, Hashem told us not to eat from the tree and also not to touch it. So she went ahead and she touched the tree. So, and she held the fruit. So her sense of touch is involved in the chet. It then says, Vatera isha kitova eats the ma'achal. It says that she saw that it was good to eat. So her eyesight's involved in the sin. And it's kisavi le'nayim. It's a desire to the eyes. And then it says, she took of the fruit and she ate it. So that's her sense of taste. So all the senses are involved besides sense of smell. The sense of smell is not involved. It doesn't say that she smelled the fruit and it smelled delicious. That's not there. So why is that? So one explanation of this is, I mean, it can be taken from different directions. But we know that the Gemara teaches us the sense of smell is a very spiritual sense. The Gemara has a question, do you make a bracha on smell? Which we do. We make a bracha on besamim. But the Gemara has to find a source for that. And the source the Gemara quotes is Kol HaNeshama Tehallel Ka, that the entire neshama should praise Hashem. So the Gemara is implying to us that when we make a bracha on smell, it's not our body just enjoying it, it's our neshama enjoying the smell. It's a sense that it connects with the neshama more so than other senses do. So therefore we make a bracha on smell because kol neshama to halakha neshama to praise Hashem. The neshama is enjoying the smell, the neshama should praise Hashem. So some explain, well, why is smell more closely related to the neshama? Well, for this reason, because it wasn't involved in the original chet. That's how some explain it. You could explain it the opposite way. Maybe smell wasn't involved in the chet, because since smell is a sense of the neshama, she wouldn't have sinned had she smelled the tree. She would have said, something is off over here. Like, for instance, you look at a bottle of milk, and it's cold, and it's white, looks good, and you smell it, you could tell it's sour. So if Chava had tried to smell that fruit, she may have smelled something was off about it, spiritually. She may have had that sense of smell. So she didn't smell. And when she didn't smell, well, her eyes deceived her, and her touch deceived her, and her ears deceived, everything else deceived her, thinking it was good. But the smell enables you to see something a little bit deeper here. The smell allows you to see beyond the surface. So had Chava been able to smell the tree, she may have then been able to detect that this is rotten to do. Because you can sense the deeper impact, deeper impression. So in Marcheshvan, It's also the smell. We have the sense of smell as part of Mar Cheshvan. That's where it comes from. So I think there's two parts to it. Number one, no, Mar Cheshvan, we have two sides of Mar Cheshvan. You have the challenges that we face, as we said, of this everyday mundane month. But there's also the ability to try to sense something deeper. That if we can able to take in the aroma of Mar Cheshvan, we should be able to sense the spiritual elements that are still here in the air from Tishrei. Yeah.
It's interesting because when Yaakov came to Yitzchak, it was the flip of that, because Yitzchak couldn't see him.
Right.
He could hear him, and he could feel him, but he smelled Gan Eden, right?
Right.
He said, I smell the...
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me.
Because I smell it tzaddik.
Smell.
Right.
The smell of Gan Eden.
Right.
I feel the feeling of Esav, and I hear it, but I smell...
Right. That's interesting. I think his smell is telling him the right thing.
Right.
His smell is saying, this is the right person to bracha to.
Right.
Yeah, that's very good. It's exactly the same point. You can smell something beyond the surface, which is correct.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in English, we say something smells fishy here. You know, like, that's the phrase we use. Like, it just doesn't, something seems off. You know, everything looks right, but something just seems off about this person, you know? So it's the same concept, that smell has that ability. You can kind of dig beneath the surface with smell. So that which remains behind from Tishrei, the aroma, which still have that smell, that aroma somewhat, you know, in our minds, you know, in our actions, and that should carry us through the month of Mar Cheshvan. Because that's what is projected, you know, after the action. It's also interesting, the very last kli in the building of the Mishkan. So the Torah first describes all of the kelim, and then it describes the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. And at the very end, it goes back to describe one final kli, which is the mizbeach they burn the ketoros on, the incense for smell. So all the farshim are struggle with the fact, like, that belongs back in Parshas Truma. Why isn't it tzaveh? It should have been with all the other kelim. We have the mizbeach, we have the aron, we have the shulchan. So that belongs in that listing. But yeah, the Torah waits. It goes through all the big day kahuna, and then at the very end, it puts it in the mizbeach ketoros. Why is that? And a very mizbech ketoros is made for smell. Like ketoros, you burn, you smell the spices, the incense. It's made for aroma. It's the very last thing. The every korban has an aspect of it called reach nicholach, this pleasing smell to Hashem. And this whole idea of smell being the final thing is that, you know, an action is an action. You know, I did it, and it's done. But it remains afterwards. So there's a sense of, from our end, we have a sense of, you know, pride, satisfaction. That's the reach nicholach which comes from it. That means my action has put forth a beautiful aroma. It's not just that I did something, but it left behind an impression which is meaningful, and which I'm proud of, and which is an accomplishment. And from Hashem's end as well, what Hashem's looking for is not just the piece of meat burning on the Mizbeach, not just the blood sprinkled on the Mizbeach, but He's looking for the reach nicholach. Hashem's looking for, I want to sense the lasting beauty, the lasting pleasure I get from your action. So Tishrei was a time where we did a lot of actions. And Mar Cheshvan is a time where we hope that the pleasing aroma of those actions remains. The Reach Nicholach of the Karban burns and Hashem is able to enjoy it. And we can sense it. That's what we hope for in Mar Cheshvan. So that's why Mizbech HaKetoros is listed last, because the final point of any action that you do is there a pleasing aroma that emerges from it? Is there a sense of accomplishment? Is there a sense of pride that comes from that action or not? So that's the symbolism of Mizbech HaKetoros being last. And Cheshvan is, okay, I did so much in Tishrei, is there anything left of it at all? Is that aroma still in the air or not? Can I still sense that accomplishment, that pride of Tishrei, or is that gone? So we hope that Tishrei leaves us with a certain nachas, a feeling of accomplishment that Hashem has from us and that we have from our own personal accomplishments. And that's where the reach of Cheshvan, that's where the reach comes in. So now if we've understood how Menashe ties in to Mar Cheshvan, the Nun, and then the sense of smell. And those are all three points. And they're all hitting on the same point. Everything we've said until now is all that same, it's circling around the same focal point, which is that Mar Cheshvan is the time to take what you did in Tishrei and let it last. You know, make it continue, help maintain it. That's Mar Cheshvan. So I want to move to a different point. My notes are out of order today, I'm sorry. That's fine. And I took these notes at different times, and then, like, I just didn't put them in the right order, and I numbered what I wanted to do in order. Oh, here it is. Okay. So, the one last thing we didn't explain, there's a few other things we didn't explain. One thing we didn't explain, though, is we always discuss the, what's the mazel of each month. You know, we look at the sign of the constellation of every single month. So the mazel of Mar Cheshvan is mazel Akrav, a scorpion, Scorpio. It's a scorpion. And what's the connection? Like, a scorpion's a pretty threatening animal. And Baruch Hashem, I don't think we have any scorpions in our area. But they're quite painful if they bite you. They're quite venomous. And, you know, we don't want to be anywhere near a scorpion. So what's the idea of a scorpion being the mazel of Mar Cheshvan? So I would suggest the following. And I think, again, it ties into a similar idea. The Gemara tells us that it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that there are three things that come Hesach Hadas. Hesach Hadas means like a lapse of focus. It says, it's an interesting list. It says Metzia, a lost object. Meaning, a person doesn't go out looking for lost objects, but when you're not paying attention, you stumble upon one. So that's one thing. Mashiach, meaning you can make all the calculations you want, but Mashiach will come at the time you're least expecting. You know, if you're trying to figure out when he's coming, you're not going to be right. But we're not paying attention, Mashiach's going to sneak up on us. So Mashiach comes with Hesach Hadas, with the lapse of focus. And then it says Akrav, and a scorpion comes, the lapse of focus. And that means if you're not paying attention, that's when you can end up, you know, Chas V'Shalom, the scorpion will pop out and sting you. So you're not paying attention, the scorpion stings. So what's the idea that Mar Cheshvan has the mazel of a scorpion, Hesach Hadas? And I would relate back to the point we said. If you lose focus in Mar Cheshvan, you've missed what the point of the month is. Mar Cheshvan is a month where we tend to... Tishrei, we're focused, we hope. Mar Cheshvan is a month where we tend to lose focus. You know, I just put forth all this effort in Tshuva and Elul, and I had an amazing Yom Tov season. Finally, I can relax. And I lose focus on my goals and my growth. So an Akrav, a scorpion, comes out and bites when one has Hesach Hadas, and one loses focus. And just to take the mushroom even further... I can't tell you the scientific proof of this, but the way the Gemara describes it, it says that if you're stung by a scorpion, it's wise to put something warm on it. If you're stung by a bee, it's wise to put something cold on it. Chamimi la'akrava, akriri la'zibora. It's good to have warmth for a scorpion and cool for a zibora, for a bee sting. So that's what it says in the Gemara, which means to us, again, I can't tell you what scientists will say and doctors, but it means to us, the Gemara is telling us that a scorpion sting injects a coolness into a person, and warmth heals it. And that's the way it's described a few times throughout Shas in a different Svarim, that there's an idea of an Akrav injecting kriris, coolness into a person. It makes you cold. There's also sources of Pikabolo described that way as well. Rav Chaim Vital, who was a student of the Arizal, his primary student, he says that when you're bit by a scorpion, it injects kariris, coldness, into a person. Even the word scorpion, akrav, contains the word kar, like cold, inside of it. So I'm not talking scientifically right now, and I'm not even sure if Rav Chaim Vital means it scientifically. It probably means it out there Kabbalah in some way, some deeper symbolism. But taking it symbolically, you talk about the idea of being cold, of kariris. So we've mentioned before, warmth is passion, and being cold is dispassion and disinterest. So we're not speaking about medicine and science, but something deeper here. And we combine all the concepts together, we can come out with a very important point about Mar Cheshvan. A scorpion comes behesach hadas. A scorpion will bite you when you're not paying attention. That's what the Gemara says. And when it bites, what does it do? It injects coldness into a person. So both those ideas symbolically will tell us when there's a lost passion, you know, there's lost interest, there's disinterest in what's happening around. That's the coolness which creeps in Mar Cheshvan, and that's the symbolism of the scorpion. So Tishrei, we are inspired, we're passionate, we're interested, and Cheshvan comes, we have the danger of having Hesach Hadas, losing that interest, losing the focus, and then letting the coldness set in, the dispassion, the disinterest set in. Now I lose my drive. Now, when a mullet comes to attack, it says Asher Karcha Baderech, which Chazal say they cooled you off. Karcha, they cooled, literally means they happened upon you, but Chazal say it has an indication of kar, of cooling you off. They take away the passion from Yiddishkeit. So we have the idea of the scorpion in Mar Cheshvan. The scorpion is an animal known to inject kriris, which means that Cheshvan is a time where we are very, very vulnerable for lack of passion, for lack of interest, for lack of inspiration to creep into our Avodas Hashem. Outside, it's getting colder. That's the world at this point. We've had a very cold day yesterday. Finally got cold around here after that rainstorm. But last night, you know, I left yeshiva about 6 o'clock and it was warm. I went out at 9 o'clock and it was freezing. But it got cold. But Mar Cheshvan is a month where the coldness sets in nature, which always means there's danger of coldness in our avodas Hashem. That when we can't be bit by the scorpion. This akrab, which is next cold, we can't let that happen to us. We can't have a hesach hadas. We can't let this coolness, take over us. We have to be sure that the spark of Tishrei remains, and we still have that passion. There's another interesting story in the Gemara. I mentioned, I think, last week that the Gemara discusses these kind of fairy tale like stories about Rabbi Bar Barchana. I mentioned last week how he's off in the ocean and he was off in a ship. So there's another story in the Gemara, the same same page, same area in the Gemara, that says that he met this this like Arab traveler, and this traveler was kind of like showing him all these like interesting sights. So he says, "You want to see Har Sinai?" He says, "Sure, I'll see Har Sinai." Takes him to Har Sinai, and the Gemara describes that Har Sinai was surrounded by scorpions. It explains a little bit more detail about what was happening there, but it says it was surrounded by scorpions. So you wonder, like, what exactly is that supposed to teach us? I mean, Har Sinai, when the Jews were there, it certainly was safe to be there, right? So why would it be surrounded by scorpions? So the Maral says a point. I'm not going to say exactly his point, but I'm going to build off his point. You can ask the question, Har Sinai is the place where one connects to Hashem and to Torah. That's where Hashem revealed Himself to the world. He gave us the Torah, and He spoke to all of us. What's surrounding Har Sinai are the barriers that keep us from connecting to Hashem. That's what means it surrounds Har Sinai. So what's surrounding Har Sinai? It says there are scorpions surrounding Har Sinai. Because one of the biggest barriers between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is this lack of passion, this disinterest. So scorpion has this indication that it's going to make us cooled off in Avodas Hashem. And if you want to connect to Har Sinai, what keeps us from it very, very often is that it's our biggest obstacle in a certain sense, that we lack the passion, we lack the drive, so therefore we lack the energy, and we lack the focus. When you're passionate about something, when you have that drive and interest, so then you have energy and you work at it and you do it and you stay focused. When you lose interest, so then, okay, it's too hard for me, I'm not going to worry about it anymore. That was last month, this is this month, and, I can't handle that challenge anymore. I can't handle that inspiration I had in Tishrei, it's just too much for me. So that's the danger of Mar Cheshvan. The cold of winter is out there, and the cold of winter can bite us, which means the cold of Ruchnias can bite us as well. The cold of the lack of inspiration and disinterest. I want to share some copies tonight. I want to share a piece with you, again, relating a similar idea. Pass that around. From Sefer Emunah Sitecha. Again, we've quoted him before. This is Rav Moshe Wolfson Shlita. It's one of my favorite Sfarim out there, Emunah Sitecha. And he says a point which relates to what we're saying now, and then also will help us move into the next point I want to discuss. So I marked it off. It's in the bottom right column here. This is a piece of Parshas Noach, but he's discussing the idea we mentioned last week, and we'll talk about more later, that the third Beis HaMikdash will be dedicated in Cheshvan. The Pasuk says in Sefer Melachim that Shlomo Melech finished building the first Beis HaMikdash in Cheshvan, and he delayed the dedication until the following Tishrei, 11 months later. It was a long delay. But the Medrash says, so Cheshvan obviously is upset, as a month, as it were. The month feels I'm deprived. I'm supposed to, if it's finished in my month and you're waiting until Tishrei to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, so Hashem says, Cheshvan, don't worry, you'll get your dedication as well. Wait for the third Beis HaMikdash and you'll get to celebrate. So he says over here, let's start this piece. Amr Chazal, Beis HaMikdash Shebana Shlomo Melech Asher Nishlam B'Chodesh Bul. Chazal say the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo built was finished in Bul, which is Cheshvan. Shuchodesh Cheshvan, Himtim Milchancho at Chodesh Tishrei, Yerachai Sanim, Kivoraksuvim. They waited to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash until Tishrei, which is known as Yerachai Sanim, the mighty month of mitzvos, the mighty month of the avos. Vivtiach Hashem Yisbarach Leshalim Lechodesh Cheshvan Lasid Lavo, but Hashem promised Cheshvan, I'm going to pay you back in the future. Shebaya Shlishi Yishivna Mehira B'Yameinu, the third Beis HaMikdash, which we built speedily in our days, Mirtz Hashem. Yischanich b'chodesh Cheshvan should be dedicated in Cheshvan. Adkan mitzarach bir. So he asked the question, the obvious question: Lama l'ratzo Shlomo l'chanich hamikdash b'chodesh Cheshvan? Why did Shlomo not just dedicate it on the spot? V'himtin, why did he wait till Tishrei? So, and we don't. The Tanakh doesn't really describe why. It just says it happened. Doesn't tell us why. So just to offer, again, this is more of we'll call it a Hasidic shot. I don't know if this is the simple answer, but it's definitely a meaningful answer. Amnam, he says, if we already discussed how when Tishrei comes in, the winter begins. The trees start to wither, and to dry out, and all the life of the trees is sucked out of them. This is a theme we developed very much last winter, how during the winter time, everything outside seems to be dead and dry. And when spring comes, everything comes alive again. So when does that all begin? At the end of Tishrei. When the fall begins, all the trees start losing their leaves, and all the flowers start falling off, and everything starts to kind of wither and die outside in nature. And Chazal describe that which it says, that Shlomo finished the Mikdash in the month of Bul, which is Cheshvan, the Kavana Chodesh Cheshvan, Shnikra Shmo Bul, it's the Kavana is Cheshvan, which is called Bul, Al Shem Shu Bo Bola Isa Min HaSadeh, because the word Bul means to wear out or to wither. In Cheshvan, all the grass in the fields wither and dry out. Cheshvan is a month of withering, when during Cheshvan everything withers out and dries out. So that's why it's called Bul. It's really the month itself is labeled in Tanakh the month of Bul, because it's the month of withering. The Sfarim describe, which we see is true in the calendar, that this is the one month that has no special day inside of it in the entire year. Again, even the months that have fast days also are special days because you connect to Hashem through a fast day. The month of Iyar has in it Sfiras Omer. The only month with nothing in it is Cheshvan. Says, quoting from the Ram of Rimanov, he says that during Cheshvan, many, many decrees against Klal Yisrael, evil decrees came against us. Because the way that it works in Shemayim is that Hashem looks down at the earth. And the earth itself, during Cheshvan, begins a process of self-destruction, when all the nature is dying outside, and everything is kind of withering. We mentioned last week the Mabul began in Cheshvan. I'm skipping the parentheses. So naturally, Shlomo did not want to dedicate the Beis Hamikdash in Cheshvan because it's such a negative month. It's not a month for celebration. It's a month where things outside are dying. It's the month of the Mabul. It's the month of Gezeros. Shlomo said, I'm going to wait for a very prosperous month. I'm going to wait for Tishrei. The Tishrei is Yerach Esanim because it's mighty in the mitzvahs that we do in Tishrei. Even though Tishrei begins the period of the year of the fall, where the things fall off the trees and things wither and dry out, Klal Yisrael always has to act against the tide, against the nature. And we, in the month where things start to wither, we renew ourselves, and we have a month mighty in mitzvos. Shofar, and Yom Kippur, and Sukkah, and Lulav. And therefore, we're able to take Tishrei and have it go against nature. We say, Tishrei is not going to get us down. Tishrei is going to lift us up. So Shlomo HaMelech understood this. He was the Chacham Mikol Adam. He understood that the proper month to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash is not Cheshvan, it's Tishrei. So that's why he waited. Because he wanted to wait for the month that was the month where we were sprouting and growing and inspired and passionate. V'afal pikin lasid lava, but even so in the future, Yechanachosh Baruch Hu's Beis HaMikdash as bias b'chodesh Cheshvan, Hashem will dedicate the third Beis HaMikdash in Cheshvan. Lahoros ki Eitzel Yisrael ein matzav shel k'mish shev yovesh, to teach the world that Klal Yisrael never withers and dies. Klal Yisrael always is strong, is always passionate. El tamed him is chachus for not. Klal Yisrael is always fresh and renewed. So the Hashem can see deeper than any human being, and Hashem says that we can even have it done in Cheshvan, because even though you might think in Cheshvan Jews wither out and lose their inspiration and become dispassionate, Hashem says a Jew never becomes dispassionate. A Jew always remains warm and inspired. And therefore, we're going to take the month that seems to be a month that lacks passion, that lacks excitement, and we're going to show that even that month is fit for the Beis HaMikdash, because Jews are always excited and passionate about their Avodas Hashem. And this is actually hinted to in the combination of Hashem's name in this month. There's a DLP Kabbalah that every single, the name Yudke Vavke of Hashem, you can rearrange the letters in 12 ways. So every month has a different order of the letters, Alpi Kabbalah, and they always take a pasuk to show the order. So the pasuk which is quoted to show the order of the letters in Hashem's name in Cheshvan is Udvash Hayom Hazeh Hashem. So you have the Vav, the Hey, and the Yud, which is another order of Yudke Vavke. But the pasuk begins, I mean, it's really two pasukim joined together. It ends in honey, and then it says, Yom HaZeh Hashem, Alkecha Mitzavcha. Today Hashem is commanding you. So Rashi, so that is the pasuk of Cheshvan. That's the pasuk that they derive from there, the order of Hashem's name in Cheshvan. And what does that pasuk mean to us? So Rashi says, Shebechol Yom 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 Benecha Kechadashim. That pasuk tells you that every single day Torah should be new in your eyes, and exciting and fresh. V'zu b'chinas ischachus Shebechol Derzu. And this is the idea of the being refreshed in Cheshvan. We draw it from Tishrei. So the pasuk begins with the word dvash, honey. We know that Tishrei and honey always go together. And honey represents to us and then the sweetness and the passion of Tishrei. Tishrei is a month that is spiced with honey. The masikas, the sweetness, no mitzvos, the pleasantness of mitzvos. So the pasuk says dvash. From there we draw it into Cheshvan as well. It's a time of withering where there's no yantif. Even so, Cheshvan becomes for us alive and new and exciting. And we should be with passion and excitement and freshness in Cheshvan. So he describes a really beautiful piece here, that the month outside tends to make us think it's a time to wither up and become dispassionate. And Shlomo Melech sensed that and said, okay, I'm not dedicating this to Mikdash right now, I'm going to wait till Tishrei. Beit Hashem says, no, I'm going to dedicate my third Beis Hamikdash in Cheshvan to show that Jews will never become dispassionate. We should always remain fresh and excited and interested and focused in our Avodas Hashem. So it's really the same point that we've been discussing comes out again in this piece, that we're waiting for Cheshvan to dedicate third Beis Hamikdash in order to bring out this point. So I want us to elaborate on one more thing tonight, which is this idea of the third Beis Hamikdash being dedicated in Cheshvan. So we have this piece. Again, this is more of a Hasidish idea. This is not a simple pshat. This is more of a symbolic pshat. Why should we wait until Cheshvan? Why wait until Tishrei? But why exactly does it make sense that the third Beis HaMikdash should be dedicated in Cheshvan? Now, we spoke about last week, all three dedications occur in the month of Rachel's children. So that fits. But why Dafka Cheshvan, why does Cheshvan deserve the third Beis HaMikdash? And it's even... The third Beis HaMikdash itself is symbolic of Hashem's final geula. It's the times of Mashiach. This is Hashem's final salvation of Klal Yisrael. And that fits into Mar Cheshvan, which in our minds, if you choose any month for salvation, you wouldn't say it's Mar Cheshvan. Every other month seems to fit better than that. But this symbol of Hashem kind of finalizing our final salvation and dedicating the third Beis HaMikdash, that happens in Cheshvan. So what's the relevance exactly? So on the one hand, you know, we mentioned how Akrav, scorpion, is the mazel. It's the constellation of Cheshvan, and it is pointed out that the word Akrav could be broken up into two words: Iker Beis or Iker Bias. The primary Beis HaMikdash, Iker Bias, is in Cheshvan. So that's kind of a cool remez. But still, like, what's the connection exactly? So the Bnei Sasker. Again, another Chassidish Sefer, but he gives a much more simple pshat over here. He says the following point, which is it's a very basic point and a very important point. He says that if you look in the book of Malachim, so we know that after Shlomo Melech's time, Shlomo Melech's days in Klal Yisrael were like the heyday of Klal Yisrael. It was the Beis HaMikdash being built and dedicated. Everybody was tachas te'eno and gafno. We had wealth, prosperity, both in Ruchnias and in Gashmias. But after Shlomo's time, everything just fell apart. Shlomo's son, Rechavam, and Yeravam, they split. The kingdom split into two. You had Malchus Yisrael, Malchus Yehuda. And from then on, Klal Yisrael was always basically, you know, split at civil war to some degree. Malchus Yisrael always had within it Avodah Zarah. The people there could not go to the Beis HaMikdash. And everything was downhill from there. That was it. So that split, which occurred, when Yeravam ben Nevat split off from the Malchus of Yehuda, of Rechavam, when did that occur? So the Navi tells us that he created a new holiday. Basically, what he did was he canceled Sukkot. He prevented Jews from going to the Beis Hamikdash. He put up guards. He erected in his land two calves of Avodah Zarah people should go worship. And he made a new holiday in Chodesh Cheshvan. On Tesvav Cheshvan, as opposed to Tesvav Tishrei, he made on Tesvav Cheshvan a new holiday similar to Sukkot. And he wanted everyone in his empire to celebrate this holiday on Tesvav Cheshvan. And on that day, it says in the Tanakh, it says, B'chodesh asher bada milibo, in the month that Yeravam had kind of imagined. You know, he made like a brand new yantif and a brand new celebration in a month, which didn't really exist. Cheshvan doesn't have any holidays. And Yeravam took Cheshvan and he made a holiday out of it. So that was the month where he falsified a holiday. He falsified a month. It was like a counterfeit holiday. And this is when the opposition to the Beis Hamikdash, to the Malchus of Beis David, and to the future of Klal Yisrael was opposed and was concretized. You know, he had started his rebellion earlier, but when he said finally, okay, you can't go to Beis Hamikdash anymore, we're making a new holiday on my terms, in a month on my terms, and that was it. That was, the split was finalized. And that all occurred in Mar Cheshvan. He exclaimed the words, Re'eh Beischa David. He said, David, look at your bias, your Beis Hamikdash, it's just yours. No one's going to go to it anymore. We're abandoning it. That's what he said. So the month of Cheshvan, if you talk about, you know, the salvation of Klal Yisrael, like, when did our troubles really start? When did those troubles start? So the real troubles began also in Cheshvan. Tesvav Cheshvan, Yeravam makes a big declaration, we're having a new holiday, Beis Hamikdash is off limits, I'm putting up guards, I'm putting up Avodah Zarah, and finish. So Klal Yisrael splits, the Beis Hamikdash is opposed, and that occurs in Mar Cheshvan. So this is the month where everything went haywire, everything went amiss. It really started in Mar Cheshvan, in terms of the Malchus of Klal Yisrael. So in the same month that the Beis Hamikdash was completed, which was Mar Cheshvan in Shlomo's time, during that month it was rejected as well. It wasn't so long later. It was very tragic. And it was not too many years later this happened. And the same exact month where it was built, that month it was rejected. So it very much fits. We understand why Sfarim tell us that some bad decrees against Klal Yisrael have occurred during Cheshvan, because look what we did. You know, our people had this terrible fight and civil war and split, and they opposed Beis Hamikdash in Cheshvan. That's when it began. This is the beginning of the rebellion against David's Malchus. So this month then, in order to fix that, will become the time to restore that Malchus as well. Because we know that we have to fix the problem, you know, at its shoresh, and where it began. So this is the problem again in Cheshvan, so we're going to fix that problem in Cheshvan as well. So the very first opposition to the Beis HaMikdash occurred in Mar Cheshvan by Yeravam. So Bayesh Shlishi, in times of Mashiach, that will be dedicated in Cheshvan, because that's going to rectify this issue. It's going to go back to the Cheshvan that Yeravam had taken and made up out of his heart and made his own holiday out of and rejected the Beis HaMikdash. And we're going to now say that no, we're going to allow Bayesh Shlishi to be dedicated during this month to show that Klal Yisrael has come back together. We've rectified that sin, we've stopped our civil wars, and we've all committed ourselves to the Beis HaMikdash once again. That's all in Cheshvan. And just to clarify, I'm not saying that the Mashiach will come in Cheshvan. We have sources of Mashiach come other months. But the salvation is kind of finalized and concretized in Cheshvan with the building and dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what Cheshvan stands for. The third Chanukah Sabayis, with Hashem, that will occur in Mar Cheshvan. So my notes are out of order again. 1 second. Sorry. There it is. Okay. Sorry, my notes are still out of order this week. So now it makes a lot of sense. The third Beis HaMikdash built in Mar Cheshvan, because that's when everything collapsed in terms of our devotion to the Beis HaMikdash. So we have to bring that back full circle and dedicate it in Mar Cheshvan. And it's pointed out, one more thing pointed out, is that Cheshvan, in terms of the count from Nisan, is the 8th month. And number 8 always symbolizes Yemos HaMashiach. It's a step beyond our world. We always talk about 7 as our world, because my celebration was 7 days, and 8 is a step beyond. So it talks about in Tehillim, Lamatzecha L'Shminis, that there's an instrument that will have 8 notes. That's associated with the times of Mashiach. Those instruments of Asir, 10 notes, associated with Olam Haba. The 8 notes associated with times of Mashiach. Number 8 is associated with the Musa Mashiach. Cheshvan is the 8th month. And interestingly enough, Menashe, which is the Shevet of the month, you can rearrange those letters to spell Shmona, right? Mm-hmm. Also the 8, right? It's the Shin Mem Nun Hey is in Menashe, that's also Shmona. Mm-hmm. So this month has in it sort of a certain tragic element, but also it's a month of a lot of hope. So let's recap what we've said. So Cheshvan, first and foremost, we're trying to carry on our avodah from Tishrei. We risk Nefila, which is the Nun of Mar Cheshvan. Last week we spoke of risking the idea of the Mabul kind of pulling us out of Mar Cheshvan. We understand that the idea of Reyach, that the aroma of Tishrei is supposed to kind of keep us going in this month, and hopefully it'll maintain us in Mar Cheshvan. We spoke about the Akrav, that the constellation, the scorpion, injects coolness into us and dispassion, and that's part of Mar Cheshvan. That only comes with Hesach Hadas, only if we're not focused. So if we focus ourselves, then the scorpion won't bother us. But if we're unfocused, then we lose passion, and then we get bit by that scorpion. And then we described how Shlomo HaMelech delayed his dedication of the Beis HaMikdash until Tishrei, because he felt Mar Cheshvan wasn't the right time for it. It was a month of withering and drying out and dispassion and coolness. But then Hashem will dedicate the third Beis HaMikdash in this month, because Hashem sees that Klal Yisrael can always maintain that passion and maintain that excitement. And really the reason that this month deserves the third Beis HaMikdash is because we have to rectify the original problem. The original problem was Yeravam opposing the Beis HaMikdash, which happened on Tesvav Mar Cheshvan in his lifetime. So in order to bring it back full circle and to rectify that issue, we have Mar Cheshvan of L'Asir Lavo, where Hashem will, Mirtz Hashem, dedicate the third Beis HaMikdash and show us that this month is a month that we can fix all of our problems. And instead of having it be a month of withering out and dying and dispassion, it'll be a month of tremendous excitement and celebration and passion.